Next morning, there were 2,000 armed men scattered throughout the palm trees at El Fayum. Before the sun had reached its high point, 500 tribesmen appeared on the horizon. The mounted troops entered the oasis from the north. It appeared to be a peaceful expedition, but they all carried arms hidden in their robes. When they reached the white tent at the center of Al Fayum, they withdrew their scimitars and rifles, and they attacked an empty tent. The men of the oasis surrounded the horsemen from the desert, and within half an hour, all but one of the intruders were dead. The children had been kept at the other side of the grove of palm trees and saw nothing of what happened. The women had remained in their tents, praying for the safekeeping of their husbands, and saw nothing of the battle either. Were it not for the bodies there on the ground, it would have appeared to be a normal day at the oasis. The only tribesman spared was the commander of the battalion. That afternoon, he was brought before the tribal chieftains, who asked him why he had violated the tradition. The commander said that his men had been starving and thirsty, exhausted for many days of battle, and had decided to take the oasis so as to be able to return to the war. The tribal chieftain said that he felt sorry for the tribesmen, but that the tradition was sacred. He condemned the commander to death without honor. Rather than being killed by a blade or a bullet, he was hanged from the dead palm tree, where his body twisted in the desert wind. The tribal chieftain called the boy and present him with 50 pieces of gold. He repeated his story about Joseph of Egypt and asked the boy to become the consoler of the oasis. When the sun had set and the first stars made its appearance, the boy started to walk to the south. He eventually sighted a single tent and a group of Arabs passing by told the boy that it was a place inhabited by genies. But the boy sat down and waited. Not until the moon was high did the alchemist ride into view. He carried two death's hawk over his shoulder. "I am here," the boy said. "You shouldn't be here," the alchemist answered. "Or is it your personal legend that brings you here?" With the wars between the tribes, it's impossible to cross the desert, so I have to come here. The alchemist dismounted from his horse and signaled that the boy should enter the tent with him. It was a tent, like many at the oasis. The boy looked around for the ovens and other apparatus used in alchemy, but saw none. There were only some books in the pile, a small cooking stove, and the carpet covered with mysterious designs. "Should sit down. We'll have something to drink and eat these hugs," said the alchemist. The boy suspected that they were the same hunks he had seen on the day before, but he said nothing. The alchemist lighted the fire, and soon a delicious aroma filled the tent. It was better than the scents of the hookahs. "Why did you want to see me?" the boy asked. "Because of the omens," the alchemist answered. "The wind told me you would be coming and that you would need help." "It's not I the wind spoke to. It's the other foreigner, the Englishman. He's the one that's looking for you. He has other things to do first, but he's on the right track. He has begun to try to understand the desert. And what about me? When a person really desires something, all the universe conspires to help that person to realize his dream, said the alchemist, echoing the words of the old king. The boy understood. Another person was there to help him towards his personal legend. So, you are going to instruct me? No. You already know all you need to know. I am only going to point you in the direction of your treasure. But there's a tribal war, the boy reiterated. I know what's happening in the desert. I have already found my treasure. I have a camel, I have my money from the crystal shop, and I have 50 gold pieces. In my own country, I would be a rich man. But none of that is from the pyramids, said the alchemist. I also have Fatima. She is a treasure greater than anything else I have won. She wasn't found at the pyramids either. They ate in silence. The alchemist opened a bottle and poured a red liquid into the boy's cup. It was the most delicious wine he had ever tasted. Isn't why Bri beat it here? The boy said. It's not what enters men's mouths that's evil, said the alchemist. It's what's come out of their mouths, that's it. The alchemist was a bit daunting, but as the boy drank the wine, he relaxed. After they finished eating, they sat outside the tent. Under the moon, so brilliant that it made the stars pale. Drink and enjoy yourself, said the alchemist, noticing that the boy was feeling happier. Rest well tonight, as if you were a warrior preparing for combat. Remember that wherever your heart is, there you will find your treasure. You've got to find your treasure. So that everything you have learned along the way can make sense. Tomorrow, sell your camel and buy a horse. Camels are traitorous. They walk thousands of paces and never seem to tire. Then suddenly, they kneel and die. But horses tire bit by bit. You always know how much you can ask of them, and when it is that they are about to die. The following night, the boy appeared at the alchemist's tent with the horse. The alchemist was ready, and he mounted his own steed and placed the falcon on his left shoulder. He said to the boy, "Show me where there is life out of the desert. Only those who can see such signs of life are able to find treasure." They began to ride out over the sands, with the moon lighting their way. "I don't know if I'll be able to find life in the desert," the boy thought. "I don't know the desert that well yet." He wanted to say so to the alchemist, but he was afraid of the man. They reached the rocky place where the boy had seen the hawks in the sky, but now there was only silence and the wind. "I don't know how to find life in the desert," the boy said. "I know that there is life here, but I don't know where to look." "Life attracts life," the alchemist answered. And then the boy understood. He loosened the reins of his horse, who galloped forward over the rocks and sand. The alchemist followed as the boy's horse ran for almost half an hour. They could no longer see the palms of the oases, only a gigantic moon above them, and its silver reflections from the stones of the desert. Suddenly, for no apparent reason, the boy horse began to slow. "There's life here," the boy said to the alchemist. "I don't know the language of desert. My horse knows the language of life." They dismounted, and the alchemist said nothing. Advancing slowly, they reached among the stone. The alchemist stopped abruptly and bent to the ground. There was a hole there among the stones. The alchemist put his hand into the hole, and then his entire arm up to his shoulder. Something was moving there. And the alchemist's eyes, the boy could see only his eyes, squinted with his effort. The arm seemed to be battling with whatever was in the hole. Then, with a motion that startled the boy, he withdrew his arm and leaped to his feet. In his hand, he grasped a snake by the tail. The boy left as well, but away from the alchemist, the snake fought frantically, making hissing sounds that shattered the silence of the desert. It was a cobra, whose venom could kill a person in minutes. "Watch out for his venom," the boy said. But even though the alchemist had put his hand in the hold and had surely already been bitten, his expression was calm. "The alchemist is 200 years old, the Englishman has told him. He must know how to deal with the snakes of the desert." The boy watched as his companion went to his horse and withdrew a scimitar. With his blade, he drew a circle in the sand, and then he placed the snake within it. The serpent relaxed immediately. "Not to worry," said the alchemist. "He won't leave the circle. You found life in the desert, the omen that I needed." Why was that so important? "Because the pyramids are surrounded by the desert." The boy didn't want to talk about the pyramids. His heart was heavy, and he had been melancholy since the previous night. To continue his search for the treasure meant that he had to abandon Fatima. "I'm going to guide you across the desert," the alchemist said. "I want to study the oases," the boy answered. "I have found Fatima, and as far as I'm concerned, she's worth more than treasure." "Fatima is a woman of the desert," said the alchemist. "She knows that men have to go away in order to return, and she already has her treasure. It's you. Now she expects that you will find what it is you're looking for." "Well, what if I decide to stay?" "Let me tell you what happened. You'll be the counselor of the Oasis. You will have enough gold to buy many ships and many camels. You'll marry Fatima, and you'll both be happy for a year. You'll learn to love the desert, and you'll get to know everyone of the 50,000 palms. You'll watch them as they grow, demonstrating how the world is always changing, and you'll get better and better at understanding omens, because the desert is the best teacher there is. Sometime during the second year, you'll remember about the treasure. the Albans will be gained instantly, to speak of it. And you'll try to ignore them. You'll use your knowledge for the welfare of the Aussies and its inhabitants. The tribal chieftains will appreciate what you do, and your camels will bring you wealth and power. During the third year, the omens will continue to speak of your treasure and your personal legend. You'll walk around night after night at the oasis, and Fatima will be unhappy because she'll feel it was she who interrupted your quest. But you will love her, and she will return your love. You'll remember that she never asked you to stay, because a woman of the desert knows that she must await her man. So you won't blame her, but many times you will walk the sands of the desert, thinking that maybe you could have left, that you could have trusted more in your love for Fatima. Because what kept you at Oasis was your own fear that you might never come back. At that point, the omens will tell you that your treasure is buried forever. Then, sometime during the fourth year, the omens will abandon you because you've stopped listening to them. The tribal chieftains will see that, and you will be dismissed from your position as counselor. But by then, you'll be a rich merchant with many camels and a great deal of merchandise. You'll spend the rest of your days knowing that you didn't pursue your personal legend and that now it's too late. You must understand that love never keeps a man from pursuing his personal legend. If he abandons that pursuit, it's because it wasn't true love, the love that speaks the language of the world. The alchemist erased a circle in the sand, and the snake slithered away among the rocks. The boy remembered the crystal merchant who had always wanted to go to Mecca, and the Englishman in search of the alchemist. He thought of the women who had trusted in the desert. And he looked out over the desert that had brought him to the woman he loved. They mounted their horses, and this time it was the boy who followed the alchemist back to the oasis. The wind brought the sound of the oasis to them, and the boy tried to hear Fatima's voice. But that night, as he had watched the cobra within the circle, the strange horseman with the falcon on his shoulder had spoken of love and treasure of the women of the desert and of the personal legend. "I'm going with you," the boy said. And he immediately felt peace in his heart. "We'll leave tomorrow before sunrise," was the alchemist's only response. The boy spent a sleepless night. 2 hours before dawn, he awoke one of the boys who slept in his tent and asked him to show him where Fatima lived. They went to her tent, and the boy gave his friend enough gold to buy a ship. Then he asked his friend to go into the tent where Fatima was sleeping and to awaken her and tell her that he was waiting outside. The young Arab did as he was asked and was given enough gold to buy yet another ship. "Now leave us alone," said the boy to the young Arab. The Arab returned to his tent to sleep, proud to have held the concealer of the ulcers, and happy at having enough money to buy himself some ship. Fatima appeared at the entrance to the tent. The two walked out among the palms. The boy knew that this was the violation of the tradition, but that didn't matter to him now. "I'm going away," he said, "and I want you to know that I'm coming back. I love you because..." "Don't say anything," Fatima interrupted. "One is loved because one is loved. No reason is needed for loving." But the boy continued, "I had a dream and I met with a king. I sold crystal and crossed the desert. And because the tribes declared war, I went to the well seeking the alchemist. So I love you because the entire universe conspired to help me fight you." The two embraced. It was the first time either had touched the other. "I'll be back," the boy said. "Before this, I always looked to the desert with longing," said Fatima. "Now, it will be with hope. My father went away one day, and he returned to my mother, and he was always come back since then." They said nothing else. They walked a bit further among the palms, and then the boys left her at the entrance to her tent. "I'll return." "Just as your father came back to your mother," he said. He saw that Fatima's eyes were filling with tears. "You're crying?" "I'm a woman of the desert," she said, averting her face. "But above all, I'm a woman." Fatima went back to her tent, and when daylight came, he went out to do the chores she had done for years. But everything had changed. The boy was no longer at the oasis, and the oasis would never again have the same meaning it had had only yesterday. It would no longer be a place with 50,000 palm trees and 300 wells where the pilgrims arrived, relived at the end of their long journeys. From that day on, the oasis would be an empty place for her. From that day on, it was the desert that would be important. She would look to it every day and would try to guess which star the boy was following in search of his treasure. She would have to send her kisses on the wind, hoping that the wind would touch the boy's face and would tell him that she was alive, that she was awaiting for him, a woman awaiting a courageous man in search of his treasure. From that day on, the desert would represent only one thing to her, the hope for his return. "Don't think about what you've left behind," the alchemist said to the boy as they began to ride across the sands of the desert. "Everything is written in the soul of the world, and there is will stay forever." The man dreamed more about coming home than about leaving, the boy said. He was already reaccustomed to the desert silence. If one finds that is made a poor matter, it will never spoil. And one can always come back. If what you had found was only a moment of light, like an explosion of a star, you will find nothing on the return. The man was speaking the language of alchemy, but the boy knew that he was referring to Fatima. It was difficult not to think about what he had left behind, the desert, with its endless monotony, but put him to dreaming. The boy could still see the palm trees, the wells, and the face of the woman he loved. He could see the Englishman at his experiments, and the camel driver, who was a teacher without realizing it. Maybe the alchemist had never been in love, the the boy thought. The alchemist rode in front, with the falcon on his shoulder. The bird knew the language of the desert well, and whenever they stopped, he flew off in search of game. On the first day, he returned with a rabbit, and on the second, with two birds. At night, they spread their sleep gear and kept their fires hidden. The desert nights were cold and were becoming darker and darker as the phases of the moon passed. They went on for a week, speaking only of the precautions they needed to follow in order to avoid the battles between the tribes. The men continued, and that time the wind carried a sweet, sickly smell of blood. Battles had been fought nearby, and the wind reminded the boy that there was a language of the omens, always ready to show him what his eyes had failed to observe. On the seventh day, the alchemist decided to make calm earlier than usual. The falcon flew off to find game, and the alchemist offered his water container to the boy. "You are almost at the end of your journey," said the alchemist. "I congratulate you for having pursued your personal legend, and you've told me nothing along the way," said the boy. "I thought you were going to teach me some of the things you know. A while ago, I rode through the desert with a man who had books on alchemy, but I wasn't able to learn anything from him." "There is only one way to learn," the alchemist answered. "It's through action. Everything you need to know, you have learned through your journey. You need to learn only one thing more." The boy wanted to know what that was, but the alchemist was searching the horizon, looking for the falcon. "Why are you called the alchemist?" "Because that was I am." "And what went wrong when other alchemists tried to make gold and were unable to do so?" "They were looking only for gold," his companion answered. "They were seeking the treasure of their personal legend, without wanting actually to live out the personal legend." "What is it that I still need to know?" the boy asked. But the alchemist continued to look to the horizon, and finally the falcon returned with their meal. They dug a hole and lit their fire in it, so that the light of the flames would not be seen. "I'm an alchemist, simply because I'm an alchemist," he said, as he prepared the meal. "I learned the science from my grandfather, who learned from his father, and so on, back to the creation of the world. In those times, the masterwork could be written simply on an emerate. But man began to reject simple things, and to write tracts, interpretation, and philosophical studies. They also began to feel that they knew a better way than others had. Yet the emerald tablet is still alive today." "What was written on the emerald tablet?" the boy wanted to know. The alchemist began to draw in the sand and completed his drawing in less than 5 minutes. As he drew, the boy thought of the old king and the plaza where they had met that day. It seemed as if it had taken place years and years ago. "This is what was written on the emerald tablet," said the alchemist when he had finished. The boy tried to read what written in the sand. "Is it cold?" said the boy, a bit disappointed. "It looks like what I saw in the alchemist Englishman's books." "No,
the alchemist answered. It's like the flight of those two hunks. It can't be understood by reason alone. The emerald tablet is a direct passage to the soul of the world. The wise man understood that this natural world is only an image and a copy of paradise. The existence of this world is simply a guarantee that there exists a world that is perfect. God created the world so that through its visible objects, the man could understand his spiritual teachings and the marvels of his wisdom. That's what I mean by action. Should I understand the emerald tablet? The boy asked. Perhaps if you were in the laboratory of alchemy, this would be the right time to study, the best way to understand the emerald tablet. But you are in the desert, so immerse yourself in it. The desert will give you an understanding of the world. In fact, anything on the face of the earth will do that. You don't even have to understand the desert. All you have to do is contemplate a single, simple grain of sand. And you will see, indeed, all the marvels of creation. How do I immerse myself in the desert? Listen to your heart. It knows all things because it came from the soul of the world, and it will one day return there.